Hey everyone, and welcome to Scouting the League. Scouts are either hitting the road and starting to knock out some pro days or taking a breath at home before they kick it back up next week when pro days really ramp up. The combine is a full week and full week plus for some. So for many, a breather is really nice. Neil and I will talk all things combine today, including discussing the awards given out, discussion from what happened there, rumors. As well, dive in a little bit more into the seminar and symposium. But first, let me remind you, like, subscribe, share this podcast wherever you are listening. Rate it. Give us a 5-star review. Head over to Twitter. Let us know what you like or what you don't like about the show. Joined again this week by my co-host, Neil Stratton. He is at Inside the League. And, of course, I am Roderick David at Right Step ADV is where you can get in touch with us. Neil is also on InsideTheLeague.com, and I am at RSAFootball.com as well. As of now, Justin Fields is still a Bear. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Caleb Williams, for all they didn't do, still sounds like they had good weeks at the Combine. We'll talk about them a little bit. We'll get into the Big 12 Pro Day experiment. All the questions still out there. The football world keeps on spinning. Neil, before we jump into the highlights of the seminar award winners, what was your maybe one or two big takeaways from your week in Indianapolis?
Well, it was obviously a big week for us. We had two big events. I was really pleased with the way both of them came off. Excited to work with our sponsors. They were great. Especially the Wednesday event was very well attended. Thursday was as well, but it was a little different vein. So that was good. The speeds continue to get faster and faster, and I think that's a clear trend over the last 2 or 3 years. You can talk about why that is. We're going to try to talk about that a little bit in the wrap on Friday, I think. It's really interesting. I think kind of the evolution of all that stuff, and Worthy obviously kind of stole the show, but I'll be interested to see how that really impacts his draft status. I think we're seeing less of that now. As far as off the field, the interviews, that kind of thing, I thought it was interesting where I don't want to say that Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison necessarily ignored the draft process or the traditional tenets of the draft process. But, I think we're seeing a trend. I think it's fair to say that more and more athletes are trying to kind of do that. And to some degree, it's becoming a status thing. I think if you're highly rated enough, then you don't feel like you've got to play by those rules. And kind of whereas there was a time when leaving early for the draft was kind of how you set yourself away, apart from others, now it's if you ignore the draft process altogether. And I think that's a dangerous trend. It's not something I'm excited about. But those are kind of my takeaways from a very busy week in Indianapolis, a fun week, but also one just with a lot of business that went on. And I think it's also fair to say, and I don't say this with any zeal or glee, but I think the combine has kind of superseded Senior Bowl as far as the place to be if you want to conduct business in football and if you want to kind of be where everyone is. I mean, it's still, whereas I don't take any joy in saying this, and maybe I'm off base somewhat, but you just don't see as many of the decision makers at Senior Bowl as you once did. And you don't see, and in fairness, you don't see as many in Indianapolis as well, but I still think there's a decent amount of them. And if you're going there to talk to people and kind of make your mark and maybe do a little networking, I think Indianapolis is a place to be now, at least for another year until who knows where it lands in 2026. Hopefully back in Indianapolis, I think all of us football purists wanted to stay where it is, but
yeah, without
question. Who knows where the guys at 345 Park Avenue want to go with it. And time will tell on that.
Yep, it is chasing dollars. Again, there's definitely dollars out there. Just going to be a question of, how many apple carts do you want to upset for that one? That'll be the question. So your Friday wrap, where can people get that Friday wrap? Just before we jump into the rest of the week, you mentioned the speed question being addressed in that. Where can people get the Friday wrap from you?
Best place to go is go find us on Twitter at Inside the League. We publish the link to sign up every week when we post our blog, when we post our preview of our wrap on Fridays, and you can dig it out of there. If you go back to last Friday's posts, it's there. I highly recommend it. It's just kind of a look at each week in football from a scouting and agent perspective. And I think if you're into that kind of stuff, and you probably are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you may be interested in it. And of course, it's free.
Absolutely. Make sure you go sign up for that. Again, it is, you know, I'm sitting there Friday afternoon every week, wait for it to come through just to, you know, catch the highlights of the week. And again, a ton of good information that may drive you, again, drive you back to Neil's site for more information, or you just drive you out there to, you know, to find more information on your own. But I definitely sign up for the Friday wrap. So Wednesday night was your big USI Insurance ITL Combine Seminar presented by the Tatnik Group. We're going to run through all the award winners here. Again, for scouts, this is really the one time outside of their own draft room that they're going to get any pub. Again, unless one of these guys gets promoted, gets a new job, their name is, you know, may never be seen unless you really dig into their staff directory and, you know, find out more. So this is really cool time for all these scouts. So jump into it with the NFC winners of the Superlative Awards. Mike Bob, the Saints best evaluator. Steve Rubio, 49ers best running a pro day. I learned how to run a pro day in my first year on the road with Steve, so I can attest to that as well. Marcus Cooper of the Giants best at gathering character information. Again, go back and you can listen to us talk about how important it is to gather character. On the AFC side, Dom Green of the Jets, best peer evaluator. Saquon Joe, my guy, former Falcon, now Bronco, best at running a pro day. You know, Saquon kind of runs the west half of the country in some regards. Really, really good at what he does. And then Anthony Coughlin of the Colts, best at gathering character information. On the NFC side, again, in the college scout winners, Neil, these are scouts recognized at maybe just the best at what they do, would you say?
Fair enough. Yeah. So I think it's best overall, kind of, again, all the facets of being a scout. And, you know, again, it's, we ask scouts to vote on this because they're the ones that are out on the road seeing how their peers operate and those kind of things. I think they're most qualified to tell us who's best.
Perfect. That is, again, from your peers. Again, it definitely means something. So on the NFC side, Mike Bach, Casey Talley of the Saints win the award. Dom DeCicco and Steve Rubio of the 49ers. Marcus Cooper of the Giants. Sean Gustis of the Vikings, Chance Trickett of the Rams, and among that group, Bach, Cooper, and DeCicco are all two-time winners. On the AFC side, those College Scout winners, Jim Abrams of the Dolphins, Calvin Branch of the Raiders, Anthony Coughlin of the Colts, Alonzo Dotson of the Bills, Dom Green and Jonathan Steigl of the Jets, Jim Ward now of the Steelers, and Dan Zegers of the Browns. Again, Steigl's a three-time winner. Again, a guy I learned a ton from on the road. Abrams, Branch, Dotson, Green, and Zegers, all two-time winners in that group. Again, a really good group of scouts, guys that, again, you expect to see every day, grinding the tape, getting the character information, very involved in pro days. Again, every aspect when they're in a school, those guys are all do their thing. In the college executive category, winners were Ed Dodds of the Colts, Matt Turpining of the Colts, and Elliot Wolf of the Patriots. Again, that executive that gets the bump there is Elliot. And on the NFC side, Jeff Ireland of the Saints, Will McClay of the Cowboys, and Adam Peters, previously the 49ers, of course, now the Commanders GM. Again, two of the six guys there, both with promotion. So again, getting recognized both by their peers and by ownership group. Dodds, Ireland, Turpining are all three-time winners, both Wolf and McClay, two-time winners. On the pro side, again, maybe even more unsung than college guys, the pro guys who sit in their office for most of the year, had to pro games on the weekends, hit lots of busy time right now with pro free agency. We've got Joey Elliott of the Colts, John Shaw of the Colts, and Tim Terry of the Chiefs. And then over on the NFC side, RJ Gillen of the 49ers, Alex Loomis of the Cowboys, and Justin Matthews of the Saints. And then one of the really cool awards, the CO Bracato Award for service to the scouting industry. That went to Broncos longtime scout, Scott DiStefano. Scotty, again, I was in a group with Scotty at the, I believe, 2020 Combine when I was in there with the O-line specialist group. Old school, does his work, does it the right way. Again, Scotty has seen the NFL scouting world change without question, but has stayed true to himself and what he does. So really cool for Scotty to get that award. So happy for him. And then the final award, the big one, the Best Draft Award. This was the sixth annual Best Draft Award. Went to the Detroit Lions this year. Again, eight picks this year. They went to Jahmyr Gibbs, Jack Campbell, Sam Laporta, Brian Branch. Again, those four really are going to win the award for them. Again, four high-impact starters basically from day one. After that, you got Hendon Hooker in the third round. Broderick Martin, big nose tackle, went in the third round as well. He played limited snaps this year. But then even after that, you had Colby Sorsdahl, who played in five games, started two. He had pretty significant snaps in all five of those games. And then in the seventh round, they grabbed wide receiver Antoine Green, was a depth and special teams player that kind of picked and chose where they played him. But again, when you've got eight picks that make the roster, four of them starters, and some certainly future impact players for this group, the Lions were the winner of that award. And again, what else about the seminar would you have to say, Neil? Obviously, you know, big success for you this year, and great having that group come and win the award.
Well, you know, two things. Number one, you know, I was just really impressed and really appreciative of Brad Holmes, who I don't know, but Brad was really complimentary of the site and of what we do. And that's really humbling and certainly unnecessary, but very much appreciated. But the other point I want to make about the Lions, you know, we're not talking about a team that, you know, finished in the bottom five of the draft and was and just drafted a bunch of plug and play starters. You're talking about a team that had a lot of talent. You know, they just missed the playoffs the year before. So they're not just a bunch of bums that had to go out there and just take anyone they could, any warm bodies that would be starters for them. They selected a lot of guys, are very directed. You know, I remember, I think the Lions took a lot of crap for taking Gibbs as highly as they did. And I think the same is true of Campbell. And I think we've seen in the last month, 2 months, Holmes kind of come back and tell people, hey, you know, we told you so on some of that. And I think that's kind of funny. But again, just a real credit to the Lions and the job they did and the team they have there. You know, last year they're a finalist for the Best Draft Award. They didn't win it, but this is two very good drafts in a row for them. And I think the, you know, the future looks bright there. They've got a good team they put together scouting wise, and they know what they're doing.
Yeah, certainly. Again, when you have a GM standing up there and saying the words about, you know, not only inside the league, but specifically Neil, again, certainly humbling in some ways for you. And again, I know you put that out there. And again, for me, again, I sit here and see it all the time, and what ITL means for scouts and everything. It's no question. But again, to have a GM stand up there and do it, and Brad Holmes is certainly something. So definitely a great Wednesday night group there with all those awards, and then the symposium Thursday morning. Do you want to talk more about some of this draft stuff, or do you want to jump over to the Thursday symposium?
Well, let's cover Thursday. I think we haven't given that a lot of coverage. We had Oscar Monnier come in, and I think Oscar's been on the podcast, obviously, and I think people that listen regularly kind of know who he is. He was our guest last week, and so if you don't, then I refer you to last week. Oscar had some very interesting things to say. The takeaway for me last on Thursday was, you know, we had about 70 to 80 agencies, representatives, let's just say agents in there, and probably, I don't know, 50 or 60 agencies represented. And, you know, Oscar's goal was to go there and hopefully come back with a job offer or an opportunity that he didn't have. You know, when he left A&M, he really kind of, I don't want to say that he left on bad terms, certainly, but he kind of burned his ships as far as college football and what have you. Really kind of wants to go out there and see what's out there as far as this burgeoning massive transfer portal area space, I guess you'd say. And so we went out there really not knowing what it was going to look like. Number one, as soon as we got done, there are about 12 guys lined up to talk to Oscar. And I thought, man, you know, we went for an hour and then we took a half hour of questions. What more questions they have? They're all out there asking him, hey, can we talk about hiring you? And we went pretty much from the seminar, from the symposium to lunch with one of the top 20, the head of one of the top 20 agencies in the NFL, who looks like he's going to be a very serious contender to hire Oscar as well. And even yesterday, I had someone ask me, hey, can you give me more background on Oscar? We really are interested in hiring him. I think that really speaks to what some people, not everybody in the industry, is realizing is what the portal represents and its future and how it's here to stay. And where I don't think the money's going away. And, you know, and that was Oscar's big thing. He said, you know, when he kind of decided to go in this direction, he said, I see all the money that's coursing through this industry for this. There's got to be a way to monetize it. And I credit him for being willing to take that chance. As a matter of fact, I'm probably spending a little bit of time over the next 2 or 3 weeks trying to identify other potential Oscar Magnes out there, because there was so much interest in it from the agency side. I think that's something that is going to gain traction. So, you know, it was a fascinating discussion, lots of interesting topics discussed, lots of questions answered. I will say, you know, there's still not a consensus necessarily on how much an agency gets to move a player from one school to another. I think that consensus is probably 10 to 15%, but it was really interesting because we didn't talk about that in the symposium per se. So we go to lunch with this one agent, and everyone who knows the business would know who I'm talking about if I drop the name. And he said, you know, Oscar, what do you think, what are most agencies charging? And Oscar said, well, 10 to 15%. And he was like, 10 to 15%. I mean, he couldn't believe it. You know, he was still thinking 2 to 3%, which is standard NFLPA representative. And I mean, and if you're an agent, you're not even, and you're recruiting the top 100 players, you're not even getting 3%. You're hoping to get 1%, maybe 2% on the guys that are like maybe 80 to 100 there. So to be able to make that kind of money on movement on, let's say, $500,000 and not have to pay any kind of overhead, I mean, that's an immediate, that's something that everyone has to take seriously. And I still think there are a lot of agencies that aren't. I mean, I recruited a lot of my friends at bigger firms saying, hey, listen, you got to come hear what Oscar's got to say. And some of them kind of, yeah, well, you know, we have meetings and, we've been working with the portal for a long time. Maybe so. There still was a lot to be learned there. And I think people that didn't take advantage of that opportunity really missed out. And we're considering having maybe something on Zoom later for the people that weren't able to attend, because I think it's just that important. And I think in this industry, you've got to know what's next if you want to keep up, and you've got to be prepared for what's next. You know, have the infrastructure, have the know-how, all those kind of things, or you can't really seize it. And so, you know, again, at ITL, that's what we're all about, is trying to help people find the areas of opportunity within the industry. And so hopefully we'll be able to do that, continue to do that over the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you said, again, what's next? The portal is here. And that's, you know, there's a lot of people that, again, it's going to change. So maybe that's what's next. And again, you've had conversations over how many years I've had conversations. Again, a number of people have tried to figure out, again, how to do it. How do you monetize it? How do you manage it? How do you set up a service for it? And again, it's going to continue to change. It's going to evolve. Again, we see that with you know, the NCAA trying to do what they're doing. Again, James Kirkland was on and talked about that and what they want to do with that. And then again, these conferences, SEC, Big Ten, joining forces. Again, it's going to change. If you're not willing and ready and at the front door, again, you better be standing at the front door waiting for it to open. It's not going to be a matter of pushing through the pile. And again, the groups that have a little foresight to go out and hire someone like Oscar's seen it evolve over 5 years, and he's probably going to be a step or two ahead of just about anybody when it comes to these conversations, which is what is going to make him so valuable. So it's a really, really, again, frustrating, fun, you know, head scratching, again, all that college football, college sports really is right now. Again, it fits in with all of it. And again, that's not even talking about what Dartmouth is doing with some of their basketball stuff and, you know, right, officially a union, everything like that. So it's going to go somewhere. You know, I'm excited. Hopefully we can have Oscar back again. Hopefully they don't, you know, whoever hires him may just say, hey, you don't talk about it, you're ours. And that may be the way it is. And, you know, for Oscar, that's going to be awesome. But either way, you know, fantastic symposium, fantastic seminar. again, for Neil, for you to get through the week, to get through Thursday symposium, go to lunch. I'm sure that burden falls off your back, and you know, probably planning, thinking about next year where you're going to go. And again, it's only going to get bigger. Going to have to rent out another room, invite more people. So excited about where Inside the League is going to continue to go with all of that. Circling back on some of those awards and stuff. Again, you have had Inside the League has had the best draft award for teams. This was the seventh year, it looks like. Saints won, Colts won in 18, 49ers 19, Bucks in 20, Broncos in 21, Seahawks in 22, and Lions, of course, in 23, as we've discussed. Not necessarily completely correlation to winning long-term on-field success. What have you noticed either with these teams or you know the way teams feel about these teams and kind of that best draft award?
Yeah, you know, I grapple with the chicken and egg aspect of who votes on and why they vote and those kind of things. I mean, a number of the scouts that are showing up consistently in the BART lists are from these teams that are winning best draft. 49ers always have a couple guys in. The Colts regularly have guys in. The Saints regularly have guys in it. We've seen a couple Bucks and Broncos and what have you, Seahawks, you know, here and there, Lions, of course. So, you know, I don't know if that's because, you know, we're getting about 25% of the scouting community voting this every year. And I'm trying, you know, I guess there's probably some, I don't know what the percentage of Americans vote in the presidential elections. I think it's a little higher than that, but it's not a lot higher than that. I think it's around a third, maybe something like that. So, you know, as much as I'd like to see 600 votes on this stuff, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I guess I'm hopeful that improves, but I do think there's probably some by virtue of the fact that all these teams that have come in and they've stood for the picture with a trophy and they kind of know what it is and have kind of seen that it's maybe a little bit of a big deal. I think they're more in tune with that. And for that reason, maybe they get more votes that way. But I do like to think that there is some, this is a good indication of the scouts that are doing a good job out there. I mean, I know you and I kind of beaten the drum for Elliot Wolf in the past, but I mean, he's won the award twice. I think he's the de facto GM with the Patriots, if not the holder of the title. But I think a good example of a guy that's done a great job. You know, on the other hand, I look at guys who've gotten votes in the past and I wonder why they didn't get them this year. One of your former scouting mates, Tumbo Abanaconda, yep. I think very highly of him. He's won it two times. Didn't win it this year. Why is that? I don't know. And I guess, you know, we're only 3 years in the BART list, so we really don't have a good selection of data yet. But in time, we will. Right now, my challenge, I think, is, you know, the guys that have won it 3 years in a row, my hat's off to them. But I don't want them to become guys. I don't want it to become a stale thing where the same guys get the votes every year. So working on ideas on how to change that. I think I may, if a guy wins it 3 years away, may remove him for a period of time just to get more people to get recognition. Yesterday, I was on the phone with a scout who won it this year for the first time. And he said, you know, in my team, it's all about, they don't really care about you as a scout unless they hear from others that you're good. And he said, you know, these guys really need more recognition. That's what prompted me to tweet out all the names yesterday. Probably wouldn't have otherwise. I really wasn't sure if people outside the buildings or outside the NFL or, you know, the fan base really would have interest in this, but we put it out there and it was really kind of blew up. I mean, I got retweeted by a lot of people that I really respect media wise. And so I guess there is a little bit of traction here. Our challenge is going to be, how do we continue to broaden it and get the word out more about what's going on? I think the Detroit Free Press picked up the best draft award, and you know, the Broncos always do a lot with their award winners. They were out in force when they won the best draft award. I think everyone in the scouting department that was in Indianapolis showed up to hear Scotty accept the award, and the Broncos media team did something as well. So we're getting the word out slowly. I hope that we can continue to do that. It makes it a lot easier in Indianapolis because if you're at the convention center, that's kind of the crossroads with respect to where the scouts are and kind of how the whole combine works. I mean, you're kind of using those concourses, especially when it gets pretty cold there. And it was pretty chilly on Tuesday and Wednesday last week.
Yeah.
So it's really easy. As we move forward, if we go to the Star, I think there's going to be a challenge there. If we go to Los Angeles, I don't even want to think about what we're going to have to do to make it work for everybody. But, you know, again, there are challenges every year. In the old days when the event was over, I really kind of exhaled and decompressed. I'm already a little worried about 2025 and especially 2026 as we go forward. But I think those are good problems to have.
Yeah.
To have those kind of challenges, you know, it's the old thing that's credited Billie Jean King, whether or not she said it or not, but pressure is a privilege. And
yeah,
I don't mean
absolutely.
to overstate what we're doing. I'm not trying to say we're like really super big time, but I do have high expectations for this. And I want to continue to make it a little bigger and a little better every year and increase the number of awards we give out, increase the amount of people that are in there. All those things are our challenges. And so hopefully we'll meet those each year.
Yeah, certainly. The scouting world is funny, especially on the college side. When you think about the average is five area scouts. The average is two regional scouts, two national scouts, which means that, again, myself as a Midwest scout, I would see 20%. And that's if I see everybody else that is a quote-unquote Midwest scout. I would see, again, maybe, again, what, 30% of the people that are quote-unquote regional or national scouts if you just end up at a school visit with them. As an area scout, you do not see a lot of the scouts. And then even beyond that, when you start setting your schedule as an area scout in the fall, it's inevitable that you're going to end up with a similar schedule to probably three, four, five different scouts. Again, maybe based on where you live, based on the games that you want to see, maybe the team needs you have and kind of how you're fixing those schools in there. But there may be scouts in your Midwest area where you just never actually end up in a school visit. And again, that's where it's when some of these guys win these awards over and over, it's because they are, regardless of the room they're in, they're going to be a strong person in there. They're going to ask good questions. You're going to tell they know how to read the room. They know how to, you know, there's an art to poking and prodding a pro liaison or an athletic trainer to get information that they want to give you, but have to be smart about how they give you. Again, there's scouts out there who don't know how to ask that question. And then on the opposite, there are scouts that absolutely do. And I think, again, from my experience, knowing some of these guys, definitely some of these award winners fit that category. But again, it definitely becomes a conundrum for me as a Midwest scout to evaluate who's the best West Coast scout. Am I just nominating the guys on my team? Again, most scouts think the scouts on their team are probably pretty good. And it's good that scouts just aren't getting on there. And well, I'm with the 49ers. I'm going to vote every 49ers scout. Cause again, that's not the right way to do it. And again, I think the variety of names we have in here, variety of teams over the years, definitely tells you that that's not happening, which is really good. And again, if your name is put up, if you get a single vote, if anybody else looks at you that way, that's good. And definitely a feather in the cap for a bunch of these scouts out there.
The other challenge, Roderick, and I don't mean to cut you off, is pro guys. I mean, you're not going to
absolutely.
It's even more kind of limited in who you see and those kind of things. I hope that we are fairly giving those guys a shot. I mean, we've had a little bit of crossover, but I'm trying to kind of deconstruct all that and really decide how that works. I mean, those you're talking about guys that really stay in their own room and don't get to get out and don't get others don't get really, really get to see them. So hats off to those guys that are winning because they're obviously getting the votes and obviously they've earned some respect. I hope that we can continue to improve and sift through and figure out how the best way is to really get these guys evaluated and that kind of thing. You know, we're just kind of trying to figure it out as we go, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, when you start talking and getting into the best drafting teams, again, that is always one of those ones where, again, I see 25 different PFF mock drafts where they are given grades every day. And again, from a scouting perspective, it's again, this is PFF's ranking. If you take player X in spot Y, you're going to get this letter grade. Again, great fun. It's fun for the process. It's good for football, all those kinds of things. When you start thinking about these teams that have won the best draft award over the year, again, Lions, it's easy to see four impact starters, and not just starters, impact starters, players that allowed them to get as far in the playoffs as they did. Again, that's when you draft four year one starters, that's a good draft, regardless of, you know, where they're taking what round. Again, you saw the same thing with the Seahawks. You think about what the Bucks, 49ers, again, going all the way back through. It's always one of the then questions. Again, there are NFL teams who they're drafting, or their draft criteria is what is this player going to be by the end of year two, as opposed to this guy needs to be drafted and a starter year one. Again, I remember going in the 2016 draft, again, before he started giving the award with the Falcons, we knew we needed at least four starters to come out of that draft. We take Keanu Neal, starter, Deion Jones, starter, Brian Poole, free agent. We drafted Devondre Campbell in the fifth, became an impact starter on the Super Bowl team. On the offensive side, Austin Hooper, and then, you know, drafted Wes Schweitzer as well, former left tackle, who, again, didn't start that year, was a key backup, became a starter, has, you know, made some money in free agency, and then Devin Fuller, who, you know, had a knee injury, never kind of got going. But again, five starters, four drafted, I can't remember. Then Brian Poole's the CFA, started nickel. Again, I think he led the league in nickel snaps that year. Again, different teams go into the draft with different expectations, criteria. Again, to your point of, is this team loaded? Is this team, do they need a bunch of high impact starters, or can we draft maybe that developmental guy that's going to eventually be a good starter? Again, the perfect, everybody wants to point to the Patriots. Again, the lack of success or success of the drafts that the Patriots have had. Again, I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Cole Strange was a shock first-round pick, but has been a starter, right? Again, Mike Onwenu was a late-round pick that's a free agent now that was, you know, is he ever going to be an impact player? Is he ever going to be a starter? Oh, he started a bunch of positions. He's going to go make money in free agency. The Patriots, as much as anybody, draft players with a specific need, specific vision for their team. The problem then after year one or year two, or going into the year, again, injuries obviously are always going to affect things. Maybe a coaching change, maybe a scheme change. And again, after 1 year, you know, draft analyzing, you always go back and, all right, let's do a look back in 4 years. Was the 2021 Broncos draft as good as we thought it was that first year? What about the 1949ers? Again, you start going out a couple of years. Again, what does it mean for those teams? Again, teams that draft and develop. You think about the Packers. Again, at one time, they were the draft and develop team. Again, maybe one or two players that were not first-time Packers had never been on another roster. That's obviously changed a little bit with Goody. But, again, you think about teams like that. The Ravens have that reputation. We're going to draft. We're going to develop. We're going to put a bunch of good players on our practice squad. Maybe that means paying them a little bit more on the practice squad to keep them around, keep them from jumping ship, signing to a 53. But again, it all plays into that. So it becomes almost a nuanced award. But again, a team like the Lions, it's a no-brainer. I mean, that was the list of teams this year was really good, with the Rams, Seahawks, Steelers, Texans, Vikings. Again, the Texans. You've got your two corner pieces right there in Stroud and you know, I'll forget the pass rusher's name out of Alabama, but again, you've got your two corner pieces. You could almost make the argument that those two pieces alone, you know, deserve a best draft award. When you get your franchise quarterback, that's a good draft. So again, you walk away without the award, but you feel really good about it. Again, same thing for teams like the Rams and Seahawks, Steelers, Vikings. Again, you've got corner piece, you know, future pieces that are going to be on your roster for a long time. So it's a great award, one that, you know, we could, you know, go back. We could spend a whole episode talking about those, you know, the six or the seven best draft teams and really, you know, picking them apart and seeing where some of those are at now and having some fun with it. But perhaps a topic for another episode.
Absolutely. Love to do that stuff. You know, it was interesting. The Rams came in second, and I wasn't surprised. They had an outstanding draft. The interesting thing about the Rams is they're doing things in very non-traditional ways now. You know, I think they're leaning a little bit more on analytics. They're not sending their scouts out to everything, doing a lot more stuff in-house. So I thought that was interesting. And then the Texans, you know, I really expected them to get more consideration. You know, you got the offensive rookie and the defensive rookie of the year, and yet they finished third in polling. And so, you know, it's interesting how scouts look at this. In some ways, they look at it kind of the way a fan would as far as they vote. In some ways, they don't. I think if we had had this vote for fans, I think the Texans get a lot more consideration because of those two guys at the top of the draft and the fact that they appear to have gotten their franchise quarterback, you know, which is so elusive. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the eyes of the scouts, I think they kind of saw how the Lions were building a team. And just like you said, to get four starters in one draft, that's amazing. And they, you know, all impact players. And who knows, maybe Hendon Hooker down the line is a guy that makes a big difference for them as a quarterback as well. I mean, everyone knew this was kind of a redshirt year for him coming off the knee injury. So the future could be even brighter for this draft class. I mean, time will tell.
Yeah. Again, it becomes a fun conversation. Again, looking at the long term, again, how long will these guys sign? Are you expecting to, again, when you've got two first round picks are going to come up, fifth year options in the same year, again, that's going to be a lot of money that you're going to have to dedicate to those players. So when you're hitting on, you know, players in every round, again, the Rams, you start thinking about Puka, where they drafted him and what he meant to that team. Again, a late round draft pick is probably going to garner you a little bit more attention than, again, hitting on your second and third overall pick, right? Again, that has to be part of the argument. And there is, again, the teams that really draft the best are going to draft good in every round, draft well in every round. And again, we could get into it with all these teams and really look at where they made their money in the draft. But again, if you're on that list, if you're one of these six teams, you knocked it out of the park. And I think most scouts are going to walk away most times feeling good about their draft. I'm not going to say every time, but are going to feel good about it. And again, is it was something that Thomas used to always tell us is, you know, at the end of the day, as soon as we pull their card, it's not your guy, it's our guy. It is, they now become a Texan, a Lion, a Ram. So again, whatever grade you individually had on them, it's time to forget that. Now you may check your receipts in a year or two. And I think that's an important part of scouting is, you know, going back and reevaluating your evaluation, reevaluating the way the team looked at them. And again, it's a great exercise for scouts at every level. And again, for those that want to look, you know, do that deep dive into some of these, you know, go back to the 2022 team, you know, Seahawks, Chiefs, Jets, Lions, Ravens. Again, the top five there, top six there, if I can count top five there. And again, do your deep dive, see who's still sticking around and hanging on and doing their thing for them. So it's fun. It's tough. There's, again, plenty of nuance, injuries, coaching changes, staff changes, you know, every number of things contribute to it. But again, hopefully at the end of the day, these teams are sticking with their players and continue to roll through it. So all part of the fun that inside the league gets to have, right?
That's right. It is a lot of fun to get to dive into all this stuff and kind of wade through it.
Perfect. Back at the combine, two guys that it sounds like they had good weeks, very different ways, very different reasons. Marvin Harrison Jr., Caleb Williams. Again, the interesting thing about these two guys, Caleb Williams seems like he's got a lot of voices in his corner. His voice is obviously very strong. He's very confident. On the flip side, Marvin Harrison Jr., unrepresented. Who is telling him what to do? Who's giving him advice? Who's he going to? Did you get a consensus either of these guys' decisions to not do what they didn't do in Indy going to hurt them at all, you think?
I don't think so. I spoke to one scout who unsolicited, I mean, we weren't even talking about the draft, told me how impressive Marvin Harrison was in his interview. And I don't know if he's been coached on anything or, you know, I don't know if there's a lot of big bruises that Marvin Harrison Jr. needs to talk about anyway. I mean, seems to be a pretty clean player on and off the field, but really was excited about the way Harrison handled himself. And is that because his dad was in the league? That's probably got something to do with it.
Right.
Is it because he came from one of the, glory programs in college football? That probably has something to do with it. Is it because he's got that kind of personality? That probably has something to do with it as well. I think that he's done a great job of kind of maybe avoiding some of the issues that Caleb Williams has had to deal with as far as off field and where some are questioning his intangibles and all those kind of things. It looks like to me, notwithstanding the fact that Harrison didn't work out, and I think it's a toss up whether or not he will, he looks like maybe the safe pick in this draft. I mean, there just don't seem to be a lot of detractors out there, a lot of things that anyone's pointing to. Now, if he goes out and decides to run in Columbus and doesn't run such a superlative time, then maybe people start dinging him about that. But I don't, until that happens, I don't think it's fair to have that criticism of him. So far, so good on him cruising along. And I think Williams, again, who's kind of played it safe and kind of gotten on his bicycle, so to speak, as far as the testing and even the medicals. I mean, it's it's crazy to me that someone not even go through to go to the hospital during combine week, but that's what he's chosen to do. And I guess so far, so good. I just hope we don't get to a place where strategically every player is trying to be a mystery and trying to avoid all that stuff from a football standpoint. If you're looking at it strictly from a representation angle and what's best for the player, maybe strategically that's better. But at some point, I think it's going to come back to haunt some of these guys. And I guess selfishly from a person who wants to see the most and best evaluation, I guess I hope that again, I'm not rooting against anyone, but I do hope that they're, at some point, there are some ramifications for guys that avoid this stuff, because I guess it feels a little disingenuous to me.
Yeah, certainly. Again, with like you said, the lack of warts for Marvin Harrison Jr., may dictate that. He just doesn't seem to have a lot of questions to answer. And again, it's one of the things that I talk to people about all the time is, if you make a decision not to do something, it's going to lead to a question. Again, in the same way that if you do something and maybe the performance isn't right or something doesn't go the way it's supposed to, again, you're going to have to answer that question. Questions are going to be asked either way. Maybe those questions are going to be easy for Marvin Harrison Jr. I just didn't have anything to prove. What do you want to know? For Caleb Williams, again, at some point, he's going to have to answer every medical question. You hope for Caleb, for that whole camp, for anybody that makes the decision to not go through medicals, he's going to have to do the medical at some point. You hope for Caleb that it's for one team. He signs there. He signs an extension, another extension, and he is with one team. There's also that thing called free agency, where if you have no medical that's out there for all 32 teams, it just means more medical down the road. Again, and is that going to be something that, again, now you're having to, do medical at two or three different cities to just get a baseline measurement? And again, like I said, it brings up the question, why don't you want to do medical? Why are you avoiding it? Why are you not doing these things? Why did you say this? Caleb's got a lot more of those questions to answer. And as a quarterback, where you better feel really good about it, could it hurt him? Again, I don't know if it ultimately will. Anybody that's questioning his on-field talent is just doing it for clicks and, clickbait, because again, the on-field talent, there's no question he is, he's got the most complete, his game is going to translate to the NFL. He's ready to go there. Now, everything else, yes, you can question that. That's all part of the process. It's just going to lead to more questions down the road for these guys. And I'm like you, again, you don't want this to be more the norm. Again, this year it's one, next year it's two. Then it becomes the entire first round and, creates all sorts of issues. Maybe will lead to, a few dollar bills being thrown out there to try to get something to happen eventually. But becomes an interesting conversation for both those guys. Another thing at the combine that I was following, obviously there was a big change in New England. You've got Elliott Wolf, who, essentially acted as the GM there, did some press conferences. Gerard Mayo, again, the new head coach. Again, I appreciated the fact that both guys did what they could to not poo-poo Coach Belichick and everything that he has done. He's the greatest to do it. He again, Andy Reid's going to make his case over the next couple of years with Patrick Mahomes, but it's hard to argue with Bill Belichick and being the greatest head coach of all time. They multiple times, no disrespect to the GOAT, no disrespect to Bill. Things are going to change. That is fine. Now, both Elliott and Gerard got raked over the coals. They got, you know, questioned. They got asked questions. Again, there's more than one way to skin a cat. There's 32 ways that teams are doing things right now. And again, when you get a change that that is happening for, you know, an organization that had the stability that the Patriots did for so long, again, it's not a disrespect. Times have changed. Things have changed. What was your sense on the Patriots as they kind of navigated those waters? Did they do enough? Are people, is that just a media thing kind of drumming things up, or it was there any sense that these guys are tearing down what Bill built?
You know, I mean, the truth of the matter is they don't have a quarterback right now. And I know that, I know that you're a big fan of Bill Belichick, and I don't mean any disrespect, but the fact is they've got to find one. And
yeah,
and the fact is, if we can all argue about how much was Brady and how much it was Belichick, but the fact is they had a, you know, the GOAT there for many years, and they don't have a guy like that right now. And until they find that person, they've got to do things differently. They can't let things go stale. And I think maybe it had gotten a little stale there. I mean, you look at what Elliott's done and where he's been, and wins have followed. You know, in Green Bay, obviously that's one of the, to me, one of the top five or six organizations year for year in the NFL. They got the Browns to win, and that had a lot to do with Dorsey and Highsmith as well, of course, but they were able to turn things around there in a place where a lot of people had kind of written off the Browns because of their reliance on analytics and all those kind of things. They were able to kind of bring a bit of the Packers spirit to the team. And I have to believe that in time, if they're given enough rope, that they will turn it around as well. I'm a believer in Elliott. I think a lot of people are, and that's borne out by his bar list wins. I think they have to be given enough room to make some changes. And I don't know if there are a lot of Belichick loyalists that wanted to give him problems in the media or anything else. Really haven't been focused on that as much. I just think that anytime you turn the page, especially following a guy that's a legend, you're going to have some of that. So I think they've got to be given a little bit of time to turn things around and to make things better. And I think they will. I think they've got a good chance to do that. You know, it's just going to be a question of how long and what they're able to do, especially under center. I mean, I know I say this every week, but the way the rules are right now, you have got to have a difference maker taking the snaps, and if you don't, it makes it really hard to win a playoff, to even make the playoffs.
Yeah, they're in an interesting spot in that I believe they have the number three pick. There's going to be a really good quarterback there. There's going to be a really good position player there, or there's going to be a boatload of picks that they can grab depending on how they feel about Mac Jones or free agent X, Y, or Z that they think they're going to go grab. So they're in a great spot. Hard to imagine that Bill has a bunch of, you know, people in the media that were really missing him. Maybe you could say an entertaining interview in different ways, but you know, certainly the media will get a different flavor with both Elliott or Gerard. Last one we're going to hit on, Big 12 Group Pro Day. Again, I'm talking to people all the time. Lots of question marks still. Again, we're still about 3 weeks away from it. Big 12 going to all head down. I believe it is in Frisco at the Star. All the group is going to be there. We've already hit on the elements that it takes away for scouts in the pro days, individual pro days, what it does for some of the small school guys that maybe don't have somewhere to go now. Was there a frustration or a sense in Indy that, man, this everybody's kind of looking into the future and seeing this big, big glaring pro day coming up that they just don't know much about?
You know, I got a lot more of that in Mobile. I didn't get as much of it in Indianapolis because I think the focus was really on what's going on there and maybe hoping that most of the really key signature players would work out, would run, would test. And so it wouldn't be as much of an issue, but I do think there is still a big cloud hanging over all this. And of quite frankly, I think there's a bit of a who's running this thing. I mean, I think, excuse me, there has always been a disconnect between the entertainment side of the league and the people that are running the teams and those kind of things, and the people that are, sorry to say, more interested in football than in ratings. And I don't think that this has been thought through. And it's going to look great because it's going to be very highly polished and well-produced, like almost any NFL event is going to be. But I think there's going to be players that don't get opportunities that might have gotten other opportunities otherwise in a more traditional pro day. And I think that, I mean, if you look at some of the dates that have been published by the NFL's, you know, daily bulletin, there are a lot of Big 12 teams that have dates that differ with the 27th. They're not all just listing 27th uniformly. Does that mean there are going to be some teams that are going to have their own pro days kind of as an adjunct? I don't know exactly. And there's not really one asking those questions really until I think the 18th is like the first time we have double figures pro days taking place across the country. So really this week and maybe next week, there's going to be a bit of a ramp up. But there, as we get closer to the 27th, I think that this is going to be go from the elephant in the room that no one really wants to talk about to a big glaring issue. And I hope that we do get a little more clarity. It amazes me that there are still NFL teams that don't have answers on this stuff.
Yep.
And I'm sure at some point the legal sent around some kind of memo that clears a lot of it up. But I still think that the net on this is going to be a negative, especially if you're a guy who loves to dig into the players that go on day three, the UDFAs, those kind of things. I don't think they're going to get the opportunities they would have gotten otherwise. You know,
yeah.
You look at the Austin Ecklers and the Taysom Hills and the guys like that, that when he really went out and showed out on their pro days, who went in as, who even knows who these guys are, right, so to speak, and have turned out to have great NFL careers. Do they get that kind of opportunity in a more scripted, defined, restrictive even kind of event that they're setting up, kind of a made for TV kind of thing? I don't know. And again, I don't think that's good for the game, but it's really good for the ratings. And it's really good for the dollars in the pockets of the owners. So
yeah,
that usually wins out, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I think more likely is the NFL sends out a memo that just creates even more questions, because that seems to be how they do things. And, you know, everybody will show up to Frisco and, you know, run around, and, you know, I'm sure out where it'll be at, there's going to be one or two, maybe three scouts that, you know, just grab the bull by the horns and take it over. And perhaps, you know, those guys will get a special award next year from inside the league for, you know, keeping everything on track. So either way, lots of questions. Again, you've already hit on it. Neil, how long do you think Indianapolis can hold on to the combine? Hopefully forever. But again, realistically, are we running out of time there?
You know what? I'll say this: the argument has always been that that Jeff and NFS have got the hospital set up, so they've got all the infrastructure they need there, and that's always been kind of the argument. If we see a lot of players, if we see an expanding number of players go the Caleb Williams route and don't do medicals at all, and those medicals become less important, that may be the final nail in the coffin for Indianapolis. I mean, that's. I don't know what the medical situation looks like in Dallas or in Frisco specifically. I don't know what it looks like in Los Angeles. I'm sure that they've done their homework on that, but you know, it's trending in a negative way. The mere fact that they only did a 1-year extension to 2025 is a bad sign for me. And you know, if you've ever been in Indianapolis and been part of the combine, you know that once you get downtown, you don't have to go anywhere else.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it. I mean,
yep.
You don't even have to Uber anywhere. You can just walk pretty much everywhere you want to go. And for the most part, you don't even have to go outside if you know the concourses and the catwalks and all those kind of things. So, you know, like everybody else in the league, I'm really hopeful, or at least everyone that I know, everyone I spoke to, I'm really hopeful that they come to their senses and not try to turn this into a Super Bowl thing. But if I know the league, they probably will. And so I'm just on the edge of my seat wondering what the costs are going to go up, going to become as we continue to try to do our stuff. And, you know, we're just a very tiny portion of all this stuff. So, you know, we'll see what happens and where it goes from here.
Well, I'm sure as big and awesome as our podcast is, I'm sure Mr. Goodell is sitting there listening. So, you know, Roger, keep it in Indy, you know, tell your people, keep it in Indy. Right. You know, yeah. Right. But either way, again, the combine, the setup is perfect. Again, it's a spot that I couldn't imagine. Again, it's hard to imagine a combine anywhere else than Indy, so hopefully we can keep it that way. That's fun. Next week, we will be back, and we'll have a guy that knows the salary cap, NFL contracts, navigating those waters as well as anybody. Definitely want to come back, tune in. We'll have Nick Polk with us. Nick, lucky to call him a friend. He'll dive into free agency questions, salary cap contracts. I'm sure there's going to be more. Nick has seen at some point in the different roles he's filled and with the different contracts he's done a little bit of everything. So if there's a question you have for Nick, again, hit either Neil or myself. Again, Neil's on Twitter at Inside the League. I'm on Twitter at Right Step ADV. Before we go, let me quickly mention Agent Live 360. Again, if you are a sports agent and you are not using Agent Live 360, you are putting yourself behind. Again, it is a CRM for sports agent designed by sports agents. Again, keep track of your clients, your recruits, guys you currently have under contract, guys that you are hoping to sign in the 2025 draft. Keep track of every dollar, every penny, every contract. Keep track of everything. Efficiency, client management, that is what it is for. AgentLive360.com. Go sign up for a demo. I'll hop on with you. We can talk some football, take you through the software. Again, that is AgentLive360.com. Free agency really gets into it. There's going to be lots of rumors. Do not believe every account that tweets out the player's coming to your team or is leaving. Verify with at least two sources. You know it'll happen. Somebody's going to get their chain pulled. Hopefully it's not Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport, as you know happened last year with some of these guys. But free agents will be fun. If you like a player, find some video, and in all you do, keep scouting.